assembled town from his chariot, telling them of the thick assassin. As the chief spoke, Jackal kept his eyes on Thistle. She stood with a half-orc babe in her arms. Rounth was not mentioned by name when the Claymaster informed the villagers of the dead, but Thistle could see who was missing. The woman kept a strong face, and even withdrew a breast to nurse the foundling infant when it began to squall halfway through the chief's pronouncement. In that moment, Jackal felt Frails to be an unworthy name for humans. With final instructions for the villagers to come up to the fortress at sundown and stay the night within the walls, the Claymaster ordered the Hoof onward. They stayed together at first, patrolling several concentric miles around the kiln. Then they split in half to expand the patrol, and split again once 10 miles were secure. Eventually, they each rode alone, checking the farthest corners of their lands. The day's end found them all returned to their stronghold with the same report. No orcs, no elves. Jackal numbly unsaddled Hearth in the stables, alongside his hoofmates. The bodies were gone, and the bloody straw swept out, but the place was now imbued with a nagging shame. No one spoke. They hung up tack and harness in silence, each member tending their mount in a bubble of weary brooding. The aches in Jackal's body sang, emboldened by his lack of sleep. While hanging his saddle, his stinging eyes fell to his left arm, where the orc had slashed him. He held still, perplexed and staring. There was no wound. He had not wrapped it, nor given it any thought. There had been no time. He had ridden all day with no care of it, and now, as he looked at his flesh, he began to wonder if he had ever received the cut at all. No, it had been there. He recalled the pain, the edge of the big knife splitting him open. Yet the gray-green skin of his forearm bore nothing but the pale shadows of old scars peeking through the dust of the ride.
"That arm still troubling you?"
Blinking, Jackal looked up to see Oates leaning over the partition separating their stalls.
"I'd bust Zirko's head if he gave you a bum healing," the thrice growled.
Jackal looked back down. Hells, it was the same arm. It hadn't even occurred to him. Was the halfling's hoodoo that potent, that it could continue to heal wounds days after conjuring? Jackal found he was too tired to care. "It's fine," he told Oates, finishing with the rest of his tack. They stood in silence a long time, waiting in shared fatigue, shared grief. Their silent, sullen commiseration was suddenly interrupted when a crash resounded across the rafters. It came from Hobnail hurling a bucket into the tack room as he stormed out of the stables. Oates shook his head in sympathy.
"Would have been better if we had run into a couple of Uyud today, given us a chance to even the score."
"There wouldn't be a score to settle if the chief hadn't let those orcs go at Badayat Hill," Jackal replied. "The fix smell weakness on us now. It's made them bold."
"We're all thinking it, brother.
And someone needs to say it."
"Maybe," Oates conceded. "But maybe, for once, it shouldn't be you."
"Who then?" Jackal challenged, without much rancor. The thrice's bunched shoulders shrugged atop the partition.
"Looks like Hob has some things he'd like to say."
Jackal gave a noncommittal grunt. Hobnail had always been loyal to the chief. Not fawning like Polecat, or dyed-in-the-wool like Grocer, but staunchly supportive. Rounth's death could certainly have swayed Hob's favor, but that did not mean he would support Jackal's designs for leadership. Hells, Hobnail may put himself up for the chief's seat, and that made him a rival. But all of that could wait. There was a brother to burn. Jackal walked with Oates out into the yard and made their way toward the keep. Beyond the structure, unseen, the hogback was being lowered to admit the denizens of Winsome. Dusk had just begun to bruise the sky, and the slopheads were under strict orders to have every villager inside before full night. The keep possessed only a single door, a tiny navel nestled within the belly of the structure. This lone iron portal made the bastion easier to defend from within. On the unlikely chance the curtain wall was breached, the keep was the bastard's last defense. It was built over two wells, and contained not only the furnace for the wall tunnel, but also the forge, baking ovens, and kitchens. Jackal rarely came in here, preferring to take his meals in the bunkhouse or up on the palisade, where he could feel the wind and look out over the lot. He and Oates entered the stuffy darkness, and began making their way through a serpentine corridor until it debouched into the cavernous gullet of the furnace chamber. It was a vaulted, domed ring, circling the towering brickwork of the great chimney. Along the walls, stairs and ladders led up to gantries and scaffolds sprouting from the upper reaches of the furnace. Ovens of varying size clung to the base of the beast, some big enough to walk into without the need to duck. Walking around the elephantine foot of the works, Jackal and Oates soon came to the one oven used for cremation. Rounth lay upon a wheeled wooden bier standing before the closed doors of the oven. The claymaster had returned to the kiln after the day's first circuit and prepared the body himself, washing away the grime and gore, dressing Rounth in his brigand and riding leathers. The chief stood beside the bier, awaiting his hoof. Hobnail was the last to arrive. The claymaster's head swung slowly, taking in each member. He was sweating from the flickering heat escaping from behind the oven's doors. Soot smirched his hands and the bandages across his face. He never allowed the slops to help him stoke a funeral fire. Slowly, the chief began to speak. The words were familiar.
"The half-orc hoofs of Ulwandulas began as slaves. There are only a few of us left who remember the chains, the lash. Hispartha kept us for pack animals, pit fighters, miners, anything that called for a strong back. They worked us, and many strong backs broke under their noble whims. We were the mongrel offspring of the Frail's enemy and their own ravaged women. Hated, we were used. Those of us not killed at birth were destined for mass graves after a short life of servitude. And then the incursion came. Many of us were pulled from the mines and the arenas so that we could serve the war. The first gray bastards were potters, named not for our skin, but from the dry clay which covered it. We knew fire and heat and mud, until the day we rode into battle on the backs of hogs that knew only the yoke of the supply wagon. That day, we became warriors. We were carving a path to freedom, though we didn't know it then. Carving it with swords fallen from the hands of our fleeing masters. Carving it through the flesh of our orc fathers. And so, we are no longer slaves. No longer potters. We are a hoof, and we own this land that is our lot. We ride free. We fight free. We live and die free.
The claymaster paused, breaking his sweeping gaze away from the living to look down upon the dead.
Rounth was a good rider, a loyal brother, a true bastard. He lived in the saddle and died on the hog.
Looking up once more, the chief smiled beneath his bandages.
For any other, that would be our parting salute. But I think we all know what this thick-dicked son of a bitch would have wanted said. He had guts. He had grit. Most of all, he had Raunth!
The furnace chamber echoed with the simultaneous yell of the hoof. Jackal smiled as he shouted the word, as did every one of his hoofmates. The claymaster waved them all forward with a swollen hand.
Come say goodbye to your brother.
One by one, the gray bastards filed forward and leaned down to kiss Raunth upon the forehead, some whispering private parting words, others lingering with a hand on his shoulder. Hobnail thumped the body playfully in the crotch with his knuckles.
This log will fuel the kiln for a week, he said, with laughter in his voice and tears in his eyes. Let's send him on, the claymaster said quietly.
He stepped over and swung one half of the oven doors open. Oates got the other. The blistering heat poured from the roaring furnace, robbing the lungs of air. Jackal, Hobnail, Polecat, and Grocer took hold of the beer and pushed it into the blazing cavern. As the doors were heaved shut, they all had one last look at Raunth, lying upon a bed of ascending fire. The hoof left the chamber silently, leaving care of the furnace to the four slops waiting respectfully on the other side of the chimney. The bodies of the five hopefuls were also on wheeled biers. They would be burned by their own. Emerging into the twilight of the yard, the bastards took a moment to watch the smoke drift into the purple heavens. Then they all began making their way to the meeting hall. Jackal slumped down in his chair, adding his own sigh to the chorus of tired breaths let loose around the table.
All right, the claymaster said as he sat. We're down a man. We're all ragged, and we got another night to stay vigilant. Today's patrol told us there is no significant thick force nearby, but there may be another ash-smeared cutthroat skulking around, waiting for us to sleep. So no one does. Except Jackal.
The mention of his name roused Jackal from his torpor. He looked up, frowning. The claymaster looked him full in the face.
You did good with that thick. Might have been a bucket more blood if you hadn't acted fast as you did. Thought even faster. Slophead said you kept them rooted. All good work. Get some rest, Jack. It's deserved.
The prospect of sleep made Jackal nearly euphoric, but the praise made him suspicious.
Wouldn't be able to sleep, Chief, Jackal told him respectfully. Not when my hoof is standing watch without me.
This received a rapid drumming of approval from most of the table. The only fists not pounding were Grocer's, Hobnail's, and Fetching's. This was no surprise. Fetch had learned early on not to draw attention to herself while at table. The claymaster continued to look at Jackal as the drumming subsided.
Then don't sleep, he said flatly. Keep both eyes on that Tyne. Still need someone guard-dogging her on the chance her kin come looking.
Crafty can do that, Jackal said. He wanted to keep an eye on Hoodwink. For all the chaos of the past day and night, he hadn't lost sight of his goals, one of which was to keep Sancho alive. The claymaster shook his head.
I got him doing something else.
That tripped Jackal up, and his fatigue prevented him from hiding it. Two men, one knife. Fumbling for an alternative, Jackal almost suggested that Beryl could watch Starling, but kept his mouth shut. She would have her hands full dealing with the orphans tonight. Some would be excited spending the night in the kiln, some scared. Either way, Beryl and the other women wouldn't have an easy time. Mead was a better choice anyway, Jackal realized, as his muzzy brain recovered. At least he might be able to talk to her. Jackal leaned forward.
I can mind her, Chief.
Fetching offered before he could speak.
Did I fucking ask you? The Claymaster snapped. Jackal does it!
Fetch sat back, resuming her usual detached air.
Jack, you hear me?
Yes, Chief.
Good. The slops have split the winsome folk between their barracks and the upper floors of the bunkhouse, just like on the Betrayer. That's how we are treating this. Do I need to remind you how the patrols work?
No, Chief, Polcat said, giving lone voice to the general shaking of heads.
Get to it!
Chairs scraped, and the bastards stood, ambling out of the room. Jackal spent the first half of the evening in the Slophead Barracks, where Beryl and her orphans were lodged along with the winsome families who had children. Starling was also there, sitting quietly by herself, an untouched bowl of stew beside her. Oddly, she sat on Oates's old bed, just below the one Jackal had once claimed. Hopefuls to the Hoof weren't afforded their own rooms, so the barracks offered plenty of space for the little ones to play. They dodged between the rows of bunks, laughing and chasing one another, until their play became boisterous enough to receive a warning hiss from the women. Then the cycle would begin anew. Jackal watched the reflections of his childhood scamper about the big room where he had spent his adolescence. He ate Beryl's fondly familiar cooking and tried not to doze. It would have been a grand way to spend an eve if not for the pall of danger just outside the doors. At last, the children were put to bed, two and three to a bunk. Sissy, Sweeps, and Beryl crept around, comforting or scolding where necessary. The barracks settled into a tenuous quiet. Jackal sat in a chair that afforded a good view of the room and the perfect shooting angle toward the doors. His stock bow was on his lap, unloaded. Beryl came and sat on the empty bunk next to him.
"How's my son?" she whispered.
Jackal grimaced with good humor. "Wish it was him that fought the orc and not me. He would have fared better."
"I didn't mean Oates."
Jackal turned to look at her. Decades of raising children had inured Beryl to fatigue. She fed off of it, an aged tree grown strong from a lifetime of storms. As their eyes met, one half of Jackal wanted to rest his head on her and succumb to sleep. The other half found a third wind in her presence. She stirred the boy to seek solace and encouraged the man to steel himself. They both wanted the boy to win. Jackal sat up straighter in his chair, set his jaw, and checked the pull on his thrum. "I'm fine. No hurts." Beryl scrutinized his face.
"I wouldn't say that."
Jackal nodded toward the bunk where Thistle slept. The little thrice, Wily, was at her tit, nursing languidly in slumber.
"How is she?" he asked quietly.
"She's taking it well,"
Beryl answered, after a moment's consideration.
"She wanted to sleep in Rounth's room, but I talked her out of it. No good would come of it."
Jackal accepted this silently. No doubt Beryl spoke from experience, as she did with most everything, though he could not recall her ever bedding down in Warbler's room after he was gone. Maybe she only considered it, her wisdom winning out over cold comfort. As they watched, Wily awoke. He calmly unlatched from Thistle's breast and, without disturbing her, lowered himself down from the bunk, his chubby legs stiff in anticipation of the floor. Beryl opened her hands and gestured for him when the little mongrel's big eyes settled on her, but he turned his head sleepily and looked at Starling. The elf girl was still awake, sitting at the head of the bunk with her back to the wall, lost in whatever private hell continued to cage her even after being freed. Wily had toddled halfway toward her before Starling realized he was coming. Oblivious to her confused tension, The little half-orc clambered up onto the mattress and crawled drowsily forward.
"I'll get him," Jackal said, starting to stand. But Beryl gripped his arm, stopping him.
Her eyes never left the distant bunk. Had Starling glanced around, she would have seen she was being watched, but she seemed mesmerized by the child. She studied him with an unsure expression for a moment, and he paused in his advance, waiting, his hands on her legs. Starling reached out slowly and gently grabbed the little one up under his arms. Wiley surrendered trustingly to the half-lift, half-drag, and settled comfortably when Starling cradled him in her lap. Within moments, he was asleep again.
"Well, that's fortunate," Beryl said quietly. "More likely to keep her own now."
Jackal snapped a look at her, his mouth beginning to hang.
"How did you..."
Beryl rolled her eyes and expelled a half-offended breath.
"Please, Jackal."
Zirko claiming it was one thing. Beryl agreeing was another.
"No one else knows," Jackal told her.
"That's what you thought a moment ago. Might not want to keep making that mistake."
"The Tynes will kill her when they find out, or she'll do it herself."
Beryl stole a glance back to Oates's old bunk. Starling's eyes were now closed, Wiley resting comfortably in the nest of her arms and legs.
"She'll be less and less likely to do that as time goes by," Beryl said. "As for the Tynes, Claymaster won't let them touch her once he finds out."
Jackal wrinkled his brow in disbelief. He wouldn't risk a war over one mongrel baby.
"A mongrel baby that's half-elf?" Beryl chided. "Jackal, there's not much anyone in the Lotlands wouldn't risk for that. Rare is valuable, and what she's got in her belly is worth enough to die for."
Beryl patted the bed she sat on and rose.
"Now get some rest."
Finding he could not argue with the look she gave him, Jackal complied. He tried to work out what the Claymaster could possibly want with such a baby, beyond a future recruit. But his exhausted brain dragged him into darkness before an answer appeared. Chapter 17. A scream woke him. Not knowing how long he had been out, Jackal rolled out of the bunk. All around, babies had begun to cry. Children were whimpering, awoken suddenly by the same tortured howl. It came from somewhere outside, loud enough to pierce the walls of the barracks. "Stay here," Jackal commanded several of the winsome men, already alert with wood axes in hand. "Bar the door behind me." Starling was awake and wide-eyed, holding her hands protectively over Wiley's ears, trying to shield him from the awful sound. It came in waves, bursting out of the silence in a bellow and drifting away, only to come again with renewed furor. Giving Beryl a reassuring look, Jackal rushed out of the barracks. He loaded his stockbow just outside the doors and waited to hear the bar sliding into place behind him before breaking into a run. The terrible scream came again, offending the night, echoing from the north of the compound. The hogback. Jackal quickened his steps, pushing himself until his legs and lungs burned. The great ramp came into view. The gray bastards sat upon their hogs in the yard. The Claymaster and Crafty were afoot, standing near the end of the ramp, which was just beginning to rise off the ground. The agonized scream was coming from something writhing upon the ramp. Jackal jogged forward. An orc was nailed to the hog back, crucified to the wooden skeleton of its underbelly. The thick's head was angled toward the dirt, but slowly became level with the ground as the draft pigs pulled the ramp higher into the air. Jackal was standing closest to Hoodwink. "You caught another one?"
"No," Hood replied. His unblinking eyes were full of hungry glee,
never leaving the afflicted orc. Confused, Jackal looked again at the howling captive. Like the one he had killed, this orc wore nothing but a leather clout. Two gaping, raggedly circular wounds adorned its gut. Wounds like a hog's tusk would make.
Hells, Jackal breathed, as he saw the thrumbolt protruding from the eye socket.
It was the thick he had killed. The hogback continued to rise, taking the orc up and out of sight as the ramp angled to face the sky. Nearby, the claymaster craned his neck and placed a hand on Crafty's shoulder. The wizard seemed pleased. His teeth shone with starlight. When the hogback was perfectly vertical, the claymaster signaled the slopheads to halt the draft hogs. Half the ramp was now a tower, swaying gently at its apex, high above the palisade. From the far side of the tip, the orc, now facing the badlands beyond the wall, screamed. The claymaster turned to face his hoof, his corrupted form radiating triumph.
"Half of you hit your bunks. Slops, too. No need for all of us now."
"Not gonna get much sleep with that going on," Hobnail complained, pointing up to the unseen orc.
"Our friend will cease his baying in a moment," Crafty announced. "If we hear it again, that will be the signal his comrades are close, though I doubt they will dare come farther."
Fetch was the first to leave, giving the wizard a disgusted look before turning her hog and riding away. Grocer, Mead, and Polecat followed. Jackal could hear the rest discussing the remainder of the night's patrol, but he did not listen. Slack-jawed, he passed by the smirking claymaster and approached Crafty.
"Friend Jackal," the wizard said, with an affable little bow. "We can all rest easier now, no?"
Jackal raised an accusing arm skyward. "That orc was dead."
"Oh," Crafty gave a giggle. "He still is."
Jackal could muster neither response nor surprise. From the moment he revealed himself, standing in the deadly heat of the walls, Crafty had done nothing to hide his power. The business with the Sludge Man, it seemed, was far from the height of the Fat Conjurer's potency. This newest display, the mastery and manipulation of the dead, only served to solidify something Jackal had known since boyhood. Wizards were to be feared. The garrison at the Castile had kept one in residence since the end of the incursion, his mere presence enough to prevent attack on his Sparta's sole remaining stronghold in Ulwandulas. The elves were said to shit sorcerers, and though likely an enlarged truth, it was another reason not to intrude on Tyne lands. But the half-orc hoofs had never been able to bring a wizard into their midst. The claymaster had obsessed over attaining one for as long as Jackal could remember. Now that he had, would the chief reveal it to the other mongrel hoofs, or keep Crafty as a blade up his sleeve? A blade that had confided in Jackal that it would cut both ways. Of course, Crafty and the Claymaster had spent many hours behind closed doors. It had not escaped Jackal that the wizard may very well have been whispering promises in the chief's ear regarding his young rival. Doubtless, his true loyalties lay only with himself, with whatever designs he had come to the lots to pursue. Jackal had chosen to trust that Crafty, being dangerously clever, saw no benefit in a tired, plague-racked old cur leading the bastards. With a nod of feigned approval, Jackal left Crafty and walked to the nearest slop, instructing his hog be brought to him. The hopeful sprinted away. Ambling over to where Oates and the others still sat their hogs, Jackal inserted himself into the muttering. "I'll be joining you," he told them.
"Good," Oates said. "We will do this in pairs. Hood, you and Hob..."
"No,"
Hobnail threw in.
"I'll ride with Jackal."
Oates barely hesitated, taking the sudden demand in stride.
You good with that, Jack?
Jackal nodded. Hobbs' red beard quivered as he gnawed on a wad of inner anger. He wouldn't meet any eyes. Likely he blamed Jackal for Ranth's death. So what was coming? Was Jackal about to spend the patrol in more danger from his partner than an orc knife? Killing a fellow bastard was strictly against Hoof code, but it wasn't unknown. Ulwandulas was full of free riders exiled from their hoof, because a personal feud went too far.
Let's ride, Hoodwink urged Oates.
The thrice looked uncertain for a moment.
He's right, Jackal said. Go on. Hob and I will fold in. We'll decide our pattern when we first cross.
Before he rode off, Oates looked down, his face asking Jackal not to kick up any dust. Hobnail remained silent and sullen as they waited for the slop to return with Jackal's hog. A few dozen strides away, Crafty and the Claymaster continued to stand beneath their unnatural alarum, commiserating in low tones. Soon, they moved off in the direction of the Claymaster's domicile. Jackal pushed down the worries that began to rise. If Crafty was playing him for a fool, there was little that could be done. Besides, the wizard was a formidable foe all by himself. He wouldn't need the Claymaster's help, or that of any other, if he wanted to harm Jackal. No, Crafty's inscrutable plots were less immediate. When the slop had arrived with Hearth, Jackal mounted, purposefully slinging his stockbow. He wanted both hands ready if Hobnail tried anything. Kicking their hogs into a trot, they rode for the eastern bend of the wall, directly opposite where Oates had gone with Hood. Jackal made sure he was the interior rider, not wanting to be pinned between Hob and the wall. They made quick time, and the cluster of silhouettes that comprised the stables and breeding pens soon appeared before them. Oates and Hoodwink rounded the bend. As they passed, Jackal held up his right hand, four fingers extended. Hood returned the gesture, acknowledging the broom pattern. It was a quick-paced circuit for both pairs. Jackal did not want to be away from other eyes for too long.
"Afraid to be alone with me?" Hobnail asked, laughing in his throat.
"Just keeping the barbarians awake," Jackal replied. Kicking his hog into the pace, Hob laughed again. They met Oates and Hood again, just west of the hogback. Oates signaled for guard dog, but Hob countered with yoke, the slowest pace in the drills. Oates confirmed instinctively, and Jackal issued curses in his head. They began the ponderous pace, and Hobnail began checking over his shoulder to see when the other pair was out of sight. Jackal's hand drifted to his dagger.
"Relax," Hobnail groused, still glancing backward. "I ain't going to knife you, Jack. Need to talk, and I don't want to yell over wind and pounding hooves to do it."
Jackal kept his hand close to the dagger's grip. "Talk, then." Despite his prompting, Hobnail said nothing for a long while. They were passing the slop's barracks when his lips finally parted.
"Rount should never have died the way he did."
"There was nothing I—"
"Shut your quim and let me fucking finish!"
Jackal bristled, yet something in Hobnail's voice stopped him from his own outburst. There was anger in that voice, but it was adrift in a sea of shame.
"Rount is dead," Hob droned, "because the Claymaster showed those thicks mercy at Badayat. He showed the orcs weakness, and now they're testing us in our own fortress."
Jackal remained carefully still, keeping an eye cocked on the brother riding beside him, the brother echoing the very words he had spoken to Oates. Hob seemed relieved now that he had given breath to his dissension. The anger began to boil away the shame.
"The chief should have known better," he barked. "He did know better. Once, but no more."
"What are you saying, Hob?" Jackal asked slowly. Hobnail reined his hog to a halt, forcing Jackal to do the same. Above his beard, the muscles of Hob's face twitched, fighting against a dangerous mixture of fury, pain, and self-loathing.
"I'm saying his time is over."
"Not everyone at our table would agree with that," Jackal replied evenly.
"Yeah, but you do. Your eye has been on that chair for years. We all know it. Hell's, mine was, too. But without Rounth, I got no camp to start that war. The boys liked him, might have backed his axe. I'll never get the votes on my own."
Taking a deep breath, Hobnail met Jackal's eyes squarely.
"You killed the thick fuck that killed Rounth. That matters to me. You were the only one that raised complaint at Badiat. More of us should have spoken up."
Fetch had challenged the chief's decision, too, but Jackal kept silent, waiting to see where the winds blew Hob's tongue.
"We need new blood at the head of our table, Jackal," Hob went on, "and we need it soon. So, you challenge the Claymaster, and I'll cast my axe in favor."
Without waiting for a response, Hob kicked his hog onward, eager to put the declaration behind him. He said nothing else for the rest of the patrol, and Jackal did not press him. The words had been said. It would not serve to peck at them for further meat. Hobnail's support changed everything. With it, Jackal had the majority of the hoof on his side. Oates and Fetch would back him. Meade, too, long as his yearning for fetching tugged him to follow her lead. That left the Claymaster only Polecat, Hoodwink, and Grocer. Cat and Hood were foundlings, one a former rudder and the other an aloof free rider, ostracized by every other hoof in the lots. The chief had offered them both a place when they had none, accepted them into the Gray Bastards, though in Hood's case the vote had been close. Regardless, Jackal could not conjure that either would throw against the old man. As for Grocer, he had helped found the Bastards, and would never support any other claimant for leadership. Still, Jackal had the vote, 5-4. There would be no more biting his tongue against foolish orders, no more weighing his next move against the petty jealousies of an aging, sick dog. No more schemes. There were a couple of slops that showed tremendous promise. Once in the chief's chair, Jackal could put their names forward for brotherhood, bolstering the hoof and ensuring he retained the loyal majority. He could decide what to do with Starling without interference, and stop the struggle for Crafty's loyalty. At Strava, the wizard had claimed he wished to see Jackal in control of the Gray Bastards. The only way to find out for certain if the foreigner was in earnest was to make a grab for the chair. But was it time? Hobnail was right. The Claymaster needed to be removed soon. Hells, he needed to have been removed years ago. But a one-vote advantage was a fragile bridge. If Hob changed his mind, or Meade sided with the old guard, then Jackal was dead. The Claymaster would never spare him, as he had done with Warbler. Those two had toiled together as slaves, struggled side by side against his Spartan cruelty and, later, against the Fix during the incursion. They were brothers for long years before they forged the Gray Bastards. Warbler had been the chief's trusted right hand for decades before their unknown disagreements led to the final, nearly bloody break. Jackal had never been anything to the Claymaster but a contentious upstart. There was no love between them. Nothing to stop the chief from burying an axe in his skull at the first opportunity. To challenge and win was to lead. To challenge and lose was to die. Dawn broke before Jackal reached a decision. The patrol met for the last time at the Hogback, and all four riders reined up, giving one another the tired nods of a job completed. Hoodwink left without a word, dismounting to walk his hog in the direction of the Claymaster's domicile. Jackal watched him go with niggling trepidation. There was no chance he could have overheard Hobbs' declaration, yet it appeared for all the hells like he was reporting to the chief. Which, of course, he was, but about the patrol. Shaking off his unavailing suspicions, Jackal found Oates waiting at his side. Hobnail had already departed for the stables.
"Find some food?" the thrice suggested.
"No," Jackal replied. "Find Fetch. I need a word." Oates's brow furrowed.
"Something happen?"
"Can't tell you in the middle of the yard. What say you find food for three, I'll find Fetch, and we will all meet up on the rampart, just west of the gatehouse."
"All right," Oates said, with a touch of chagrin. "But I hope you don't expect me to talk. I want bread and beer in my mouth, not words."
"Didn't Beryl teach you to listen and chew last year?" Jackal jabbed. Without a word, Oates turned his hog, but just as he was riding away, Ugfuck released a thunderous fart. Urging Hearth away from the malodorous assault, Jackal shook his head. He swore Oates had trained Ug to do that on command. After seeing his hog installed in the stables, Jackal ducked into Fetch's room in the bunkhouse. She was not within. Mead was coming down the corridor, still sluggish from sleep.
"You seen her?" Jackal asked.
Mead regarded Fetch's door blearily.
"No."
"If you do, tell her I need her up on the wall above the gatehouse." Mead gave an agreeable shrug and continued on his way. Jackal had to stop himself from calling the young blood back, get a feel for where he stood on the Claymaster. It would ease his mind to know for sure if he had Mead's support, but it was too risky. If word got to the chief that Jackal was considering a direct move against him, then the challenge could be crushed before it was even issued. He remembered seeing Fetching's hog in its stall, meaning she was somewhere within the fortress, but Jackal did not want to go scurrying around looking for her. He told every slophead he passed to keep an eye out, and repeated his instructions for her to meet him. Naturally, she was already waiting on him when he arrived. Only Fetch could make Jackal late to a meeting he had called. She leaned against the parapet, her stockbow propped up beside her feet. The morning hosted a lively breeze, and Jackal took a moment to tie his kerchief across his head to keep the hair from his face. Fetch's heavy twist locks refused to be swayed.
"If you had been a deer, I would have gone hungry," Jackal commented.
"Then you would make a shit hunter," Fetching returned, smirking. "Though I make it a rule to be difficult to track when I am summoned." She put a barbed emphasis on the last word that caused Jackal's mouth to twitch. "Must have had half a dozen slopheads chirping at me to come up here."
"How many did you punch?"
Fetching tried to hold a straight face and failed.
"None. I kicked two. Well, one. The other managed to scamper out of the way."
Jackal grunted out a laugh and leaned next to her.
"So why am I up here, Jack?"
"Let's wait for the porridge bowl."
The slophead walking sentry on this section of the wall came by while they were waiting, his steps made uncertain by the presence of two bastards along his route. Fetch and Jackal let him go by unmolested, eschewing their duty of giving all the hopefuls grief at every opportunity. Besides, the poor whelp met Oates coming the other way, and was soon doing press-ups while the thrice threatened to pee on him. The verbal abuse was impressively clear, considering Oates held an apple clutched in his teeth. The afflicted slop failed to notice that the impending piss-bath would be damn near impossible, considering Oates's arms were so laden with food he would never have been able to free his cod from his breeches. After the 60th quivering press-up, the slop was granted his reprieve and allowed to move on. Oates was still chuckling from behind the apple when he approached.
"Hog's ass," Jackal accused lightly, rescuing a jug of beer and half a cheese wheel from Oates's hoard.
You brought fucking onions? Fetch groused, inspecting the contents of the sack she had taken.
Oates looked puzzled.
What?
Freeing themselves of sword belts and quivers, they all sat down on the edge of the walk, their legs dangling down over the yard, and arranged the food between them.
What are you wearing? Jackal asked Oates, peering critically at the arrangement of loose cloth the thrice had draped about his head and neck.
Oates stopped gnawing on a lamb shank long enough to look affronted.
What's wrong with it?
You look like an old juke goat herder, Fetch declared, without looking up from opening a pomegranate with her knife.
Popping an olive into his mouth, Jackal laughed his agreement.
Well, Oates countered sheepishly, I thought it looked...
Crafty? Jackal offered.
I was going to say cunning.
Fetch began breathing in laughter as she sucked on the fruit.
I couldn't find a kerchief, Oates complained, and I don't have hair to keep the sun off my skull like you two. Damn meeting on top of walls.
Keep your voice down, Fetch whispered. You'll scare the goats.
Jackal nearly choked on an olive pit. They ate and laughed and jested, playing the small pranks and needling with the old teases, the ones invented in the orphanage and perfected in the hoof. The morning sun continued to rise, and the wind birthed by the dawn faded to a death whisper breeze. Jackal did not mention his reason for bringing them here. Not yet. He basked in the comfort of having his friends sit beside him, each half drunk with fatigue and breakfasted beer. Too soon the morning would be gone. Too soon would he tell them his intentions, and the mood would change. Probably forever. If all went as planned, Jackal would be chief, elevated with the support of his friends. In backing his challenge, they would also be hoisting him above the reach of simple, pure companionship. Breaking bread and exchanging cuffs on that wall, Jackal found he was in no hurry.
Nothing lasts, however.
So, Fetching said, the words sailing on a belch. Why we here?
Jackal swiveled his head, looking from one side to the other, taking in his siblings' expectant faces. He took a final pull from the jug and set it aside, leaning forward to rest his elbows on his knees. A deep breath, meant to help propel a simple statement, froze in Jackal's chest. In the yard below, a hog was riding toward the tunnel gate. It bore two riders. Both figures were familiar, but seeing them together, one held close in the restraining arm of the other, was alien and frightful. Unnatural. Hoodwink and Starling.
Where the fuck? Jackal cursed, scrambling to stand, knocking the beer jug off the walk.
Jack! Brother, what are you—
Ignoring his friend's exclamations, Jackal snatched up his tulwar. He didn't have time to gather all his weapons and couldn't be bothered with loading a stock bow, not now. Reaching the yard before Hood's hog entered the tunnel was his only concern. Sprinting across the top of the wall, Jackal sent the slophead sentry sprawling on his way to the stairs. He descended them two at a time until he was halfway down, then jumped off the side to fall directly to the dirt. Hoodwink was nearly to the walls, and Jackal surged to intercept him. He skidded in front of the tunnel mouth and tore his tulwar free, discarding the scabbard onto the dust. Hoodwink reined his hog to a stop. No doubt his face was expressionless, but Jackal was not looking at him. Starling sat astride the barbarian, wilted, eyes downcast. She looked up slowly when the hog stopped, seeming to take no interest in Jackal's sudden appearance. Whatever she believed her fate to be at the hands of her captors, she was unmoved by it.
"What are you doing, Hood?" Jackal demanded.
"Taking her away," Hoodwink replied tonelessly.
"Where?"
The cadaverous eyes lodged in Hoodwink's face did not blink. Hells, did they ever? There was no response.
Where?
Hood's hog squealed and recoiled slightly from Jackal's outburst, but neither of its riders reacted. Still no answer. Through the hot pounding of blood in his ears, Jackal heard Oates and Fetch draw up behind him. A hand reached for his arm, he was not sure whose, but he jerked away from the touch. "You stay right there, Hood," Jackal managed through a jaw locked with rage. He lowered his tulwar and strode swiftly past the hog.
"Don't let him leave,"
he called harshly over his shoulder. Throwing the doors of the meeting hall aside, Jackal stormed through the common room, barely seeing the slopheads on duty. He pushed into the empty voting chamber and went directly to his place. Snatching the axe up off the table, he flung it into the stump behind the claymaster's chair, the wood tolling his choice as the blade smote the wood. Chapter 18. The air around the table was suffused with conflicting currents. Heavy-lidded eyes lolled above clenched jaws, rapidly drumming fingers extended from slumped shoulders. Flagons were drained quickly or left untouched. No one so much as glanced at Rounth's empty chair, or Jackal's full one. Stares bore into the surface of the table, or were cast sidelong at the claymaster. A hoof survived on regimen. Riding drills, patrol patterns, protection runs, slop training, all of these were carried out in rigid order, day after day. Only the assured chaos that would follow if just one grinding task were neglected kept the tedium from birthing madness. Ulwandulas demanded vigilance, constancy, and unfaltering patience. Even then, the land would conjure a test. A famine, an orc raid, the betrayer moon, all of these rose without warning, and a hoof's reaction must be as unvaried in peril as in peace. Threats were met swiftly and decisively, brutally. It was the only way to live in the Lotlands. Time and again of late, this regimented existence of the Grey Bastards had been interrupted. Garcia, Barayat, Crafty, Starling, Rounth's death, and the hoof had not responded with the needed alacrity. The secure foundation of their regimen had been shaken by events, but their ability to respond with customary force had been denied them by the Claymaster. The chief's pox was no longer catching, but his scheming had infected them all. Jackal saw it running rampant through all his hoofmates. Uncertainty was rife, yet all continued to look to the chief for answers, though his every word were another stone placed upon the cairn of the Grey Bastards. Jackal was done allowing the chief's governance to afflict him further. No more. No more underhanded ploys, no more conspiring whispers or grubbing for support. Jackal had told no one of what he intended. He had been robbed of the chance. But the Claymaster had also unknowingly robbed himself of his greatest advantage. His attempted disposal of Starling had forced Jackal's hand. But now there would be no time for the chief to shore up his authority. The challenge was made, with no time for either side to maneuver for an advantage within the Brotherhood. Jackal trusted Oates and Fetch completely, and he was confident Hobnail would keep his word. Otherwise, why would he have revealed his support? Hob was not cunning enough to bait Jackal into a trap. The lie would have shown, and he was too mulish not to stand by his decision. Mead was the only true unknown. His affection for Fetching would play upon his choice, but he was also only a year removed from the slopheads, and still might perceive the Claymaster as a frightful, absolute ruler. Hopefully, an erect cod would win out over childish fear. Jackal relaxed in his chair and waited.
"A challenge has been issued," the Claymaster began, formally announcing what they all knew. "Jackal has thrown his axe in defiance of my decision to rid our hoof of the Tyne captive. It's his right as a Grey Bastard to voice his reasons.
Jackal looked up at the chief, trying not to allow a bemused expression to take root on his face. Had the Claymaster truly misconstrued Jackal's challenge? Or was he giving him a chance to back away from the greater undertaking? Fuck that.
I threw my axe against you, Claymaster, Jackal said gravely. Against you sitting in that chair. The room became very still. The chief's deep voice, restricted by the bandages, mumbled over the table.
So you think to sit here, boy?
I do. Grocer shot to his feet, his axe in hand. He scowled across at Jackal and raised his sinewy arm before chopping it down, burying the axe into the surface of the table, the sign of support for the current leader. No one else moved, as the cups and flagons danced from the impact.
It appears some aren't interested in hearing your reasons, Jackal, the Claymaster gloated.
Grocer remained on his feet, seething. Jackal ignored him and looked around the table.
Mead was clearly rattled, which did not bode well. Polecat was a bit slack-jawed. Jackal reckoned he saw despair in the former rudder, as if he feared losing another hoof. Oates seemed to grow in size even as he sat there, unmoving, the strength of his resolve increasing in the face of turmoil. Fetch was typically sulky, and Hobnail's demeanor bordered on hostile. But his ire was directed at the Claymaster. Every word from the chief's lips seemed to pick at the raw ends of Hob's patience. At the far end of the table, self-sequestered in stillness and half-shadow, Hoodwink was an unnerving effigy.
"Well, Jackal," the Claymaster prodded, "you going to say something, or just sit there looking young and pretty?"
Jackal did not want to make some foolish speech, but it was obvious Mead and Polecat were straddling two hogs. He needed at least one of them.
"The gray bastards can make up their own minds about who they think should be sitting in that chair," Jackal said, addressing the Claymaster directly. "But from where I sit, Rounth is dead because you allowed five thicks to live. We need less orcs in the lots and more bastards, but you seem to have gotten that turned around. And the rest of us are going to follow Rounth if you keep on."
Jackal swept the bastards with a look.
"He gave that time to the Sludge Man, brothers, risking a war with Dogfall. Now he's trying to bury her, same as he had me and Hoodwink bury the new Cavaleros from the brothel."
Hearing that, the bastards stirred. Oates took a breath and held it. Hobnail's frown deepened as Mead searched every surrounding face, looking for clarity. Grocer looked as if he regretted planting his axe in the table instead of Jackal's face.
"But the trouble didn't get buried with the bodies," Jackal went on. "Bermudo is still seeking a way to end us. You can damn well wager the Tines won't vanish with Starling."
The Claymaster leaned forward, rested his arms on the table, slow as a grinding millstone. He didn't address the hoof. His response was for Jackal alone.
"You believe that, don't you? That I'm the root of all the rot in the world? I don't know how the Sludge Man got that elf hussy, Jackal. Don't care. I do know how I got her. You. You brought her here, same as you brought the trouble from the Castile. You went into the Old Maiden without my leave, made an enemy of a strong ally, likely killed him. If the Sludge Man's gone, that leaves the marsh unguarded. We'll have Thix coming through unchallenged in droves by high summer, because of you. And yet you challenge me, want to replace me, for trying to rid us of the shit you hauled into our midst."
Jackal didn't believe the Claymaster's lies about Starling, but there was no sense in challenging them. He could not prove his suspicions.
The time for that was over. All he could do was plant them in the heads of his brethren, hope they sprouted into doubt. But the chief had just sown his own seeds, and they were many.